1 Corinthians 13, verses 48 has just automatically pops to my mind when I think about love. So this is the Advent Sunday of love, and I'm going to read that from the Amplified Bible. Love endures with patience and serenity. Love is kind and thoughtful and is not jealous or envious. It does not brag and is not proud or arrogant. It is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not provoked nor overly sensitive and easily angered. It does not take into account a wrong endured. It does not rejoice at injustice, but rejoices with the truth when right and truth prevail. Love bears all things regardless of what comes, believes all things, looking for the best in each one. Hopes all things, remaining steadfast during difficult times, endures all things without weakening. Love never fails, it never fades nor ends. For anyone who is here just visiting or new, we've spent many weeks studying the book of Matthew with Ryan and Alan's sermons. And now over Christmas, we're reflecting on this study in light of the Advent virtues of hope, peace, joy, and love. Advent is two things. It is first the celebration of Jesus' birth as his first arrival. And secondly, it is a season of reflection in the anticipation of his second coming. I've always loved this season of reflection, the feelings of Christmas being so unique in the year. This year, I spent some time thinking about what my actual feelings are, and I was really surprised at what I discovered. The first feeling that rises up in me when I listen to some really good Christmas music or watch a favorite Christmas movie is loneliness. I feel a sense of being one person in a sea of people. One mind with her own thoughts, my own feelings, and I feel so strongly that no matter what I share with any other person, I am alone being me. They cannot know me, not all of me. The second feeling that is joined to the first is incompleteness. The chapters of my story aren't all written, and I long for something intangible, for knowing what is unknown. I want all the pieces to fit and what is broken to be mended. And these two feelings seem so sad, so hard at this time of the year. But these poignant feelings are straight out of the gospel account of Christmas, and they are the heart of the advent of hope, peace, joy, and love. These are not the innocent ideas that we think. In the first couple chapters of Matthew, the first part of Jesus' story, his arrival, is told. Love here is nurtured in a most difficult circumstance. New parents who are unmarried and have a family heritage that is filled with pride and expectation. There is also a powerful governing force that commits genocide to maintain the throne, and there are warning dreams that are scary and then turn very real. The Holy Family didn't have that cachet. They became refugees overnight. We see in these chapters themes of commitment, selflessness, faithfulness, and standing up for what you know to be right. It is a deeply courageous love story. In the next chapters, Jesus is about to begin his brief time of recorded life on earth, and I feel a sense of anticipation reading the Isaiah prophecy about John the Baptist. He is a voice shouting in the wilderness, "Prepare a way for the Lord, make a straight path." We are called with these words to prepare our hearts to make way for the Spirit's work, to open our hearts and let the light shine in. John calls out loud to strangers, "Change your inner self, your old way of thinking, regrets, and past sins. Live your life in a way that proves repentance. Seek God's purpose in your life, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." At hand, readily accessible when needed, and about to happen, available and imminent. After John the Baptist beckons people to prepare for the coming of the kingdom of heaven, Jesus goes into the desert to endure 40 days of being harassed and tempted to take the easy way out. 40 days is an eternity to feel alone and directionless and tempted to make your own way. Jesus repeatedly turns down these temptations and chooses obedience over power, family pride, status, wealth, security, and safety. In life, these temptations cause us to ask, is there enough? Am I safe? Can I ask for what I need? On his departure from the wilderness, Jesus goes to some tough neighborhoods. Matthew 4, 15 to 16 says, in Galilee, where so many Gentiles live, the people who sat in darkness have seen a great light. And for those who lived in the land where death casts its shadow, a light has shined. Galilee was a seemingly hopeless, lost, Gentile-dominated region, and that's where Jesus goes to gather his first followers. Fishermen, Peter and Andrew both said an unthinking yes and left what they had to follow Jesus. Immediately up the shore were some fishermen, brothers James and John. These two also immediately left everything and followed Jesus. To these new recruits, these four raw and rough characters, Jesus gives the Sermon on the Mount. Crowds have gathered and they listen in. Jesus tells us what the kingdom of heaven looks like. Remember Ryan's continual reminders over the past weeks. In the time this gospel was written, apathy was a virtue, and compassion, suffering with, was a mental disease. Justice as a concept meant divinely inflicted consequences, no mercy. What Jesus teaches his new followers is radical. It is the readily available, imminently happening kingdom of heaven. This looks very different from any political power on earth. I want to read two big chunks of this passage, the Sermon on the Mount, because just the beginning and end parts, because it frames this image. God blesses those who are poor and realize their need for him, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses those who mourn, for they will be comforted. God blesses those who are humble, for they will inherit the whole earth. God blesses those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God blesses those whose hearts are pure, for they will see God. God blesses those who work for peace, for they will be called children of God. God blesses those who are persecuted for doing right, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. God blesses you when people mock you and persecute you and lie about you and say all kinds of evil things against you because you are my followers. Be happy about it. Be very glad, for great is the reward that awaits you in heaven. And remember, the ancient prophets were persecuted in the same way. That's Matthew 5, 3 to 12. A little aside, that last bit has always been awkward to me. I felt like I should set aside my real feelings and magically be happy about bad things that happened to me. And I'm passionate about honesty. I'm a realist more than an optimist. And I could not understand how I could be so flippant or maybe Sunday school numbed that I could actually rejoice in suffering. But when we look at the whole passage, it talks about two sides of a coin we carry, the pain and the joy of bearing God's image. When we look like God's little children, we should absolutely rejoice that we look like such a father. To bear his image so truly, even though people react to us and hurt us, just like they hurt other image bearers, and just like they hurt him. Continuing in Matthew 5, 43 to 48, you have heard it was said, you shall love your neighbor, fellow human, and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love, unselfishly seek the best or higher good for your enemies, and pray for those who persecute you, so you may be the children of your Father who's in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on those who are evil and on those who are good, and he makes the rain fall on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love only those who love you, what reward is there for you? Do not even the tax collectors do that? And if you greet only your brothers, your friends, wishing them God's blessing and peace, what more than others are you doing? Do not even the Gentiles who do not know the Lord do that? You, therefore, be perfect, growing into spiritual maturity, both in mind and character, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Compassion, not apathy, mercy and justice for others. Blessed are the poor in spirit and those who mourn. Love your enemies. Do good to those who persecute you. This is painful. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, but do we want it? In my own reflections on preparing the way, I see myself as a Matryoshka nesting doll. I have a big outer shell. She is strong, kind, warm, and friendly. Inside her is another form, and this one might be annoyed, or selfish, prideful, or impatient. And inside her is another smaller self, and she might be hurt, afraid, stuck, or ashamed. A story from my childhood that stretched into my adulthood sparks in my mind. When I was growing up, my family was a bit unusual. We were the first homeschooled family in my hometown, and maybe in Alberta. We were regularly reported to the police and had to explain why we weren't attending school. We didn't have a lot of close friends, but we knew this family down the street from us. We went to church with them. The kids in that family made the kids in my family miserable. It was serious bullying, and the oldest two boys were particularly mean. They were bigger and older than all the kids in my family. And I strongly remember feeling hopeless and helpless and defensive and very fearful. Fast forward 13 years, and I am back in that small prison town for a family friend's wedding, a childhood friend. And it's amazing how little had changed. I loved walking past the library, the place where my brother rode his bike into the river, my old best friend's house, and even my own former home. I am lulled into a sense of sweet memory, comfort, and joy. I went to the drugstore to pick up a card for the wedding, and on my way to the checkout, someone says my name, my maiden name. I know that face. It was my old enemy, brother number two, and he said, "Wow, it's been years." And I stiffly make myself say, "Blast from the past," and push my way out the door, dragging my little daughter behind me. I beat myself up later for that, for being so awkward, childish, stiff, unnatural. And then I forget about it. Fast forward 17 more years to this past summer. My sister sent me a screenshot of a Facebook post, and it was a man with his lovely old granny, and I realized that I knew her. I had been her paper girl for years. And I then realized who the man in the photo was, and I was instantly annoyed. It was my old enemy, brother number one. I read the post with a little schadenfreude, a little hunger for revenge, some bad news maybe, a little nugget of something that I could feel awesome about. Revenge, delicious. But then I got my face rubbed into my own messy feelings, because this was a person who had just lost his dad. His comments were brief and beautiful, thanking a father who had showed him what true strength was, an example of kindness and patience and love that never gave up and hoped the best. Love that taught his son over the long years that strength does not bully, does not tear others down, does not fight to gain the upper hand. The post extended into an apology for any who he may have tortured in small ways when he was a child. My feelings shifted, and I felt this deep sense of completeness. The gift of Jesus, mercy given and forgiveness received. I was shocked at my feelings, how dramatically and instantly they changed. I was so glad to be a witness to a redemption story. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. But I cannot say that I would have stuck around to hear that story if I had been in the room with brother number one or brother number two. Even totally grown up, and they were healed from their wounds, but I'm still wounded, not just by them. I get triggered by aggressive emotion. I harden my outer shell whenever I'm uncertain. The world has always felt a little bit unsafe, and I'm wary. And trauma makes a person ask, is it safe? Trees in a harsh, windy locale sometimes have all the branches stripped off one exposed side, and sometimes people are like that too. Others can see the ugly side that's been damaged and toughened by life. But people who are passing through don't understand it. They're not part of that story. It is too much and too fragile to share, so they can be offended and judge it because there's just no context. Some wounds cannot be fixed by you and me. And can we sit with that? Can we remember that compassion means to suffer with? Years ago, I had some circumstances in my life that caused me continuous, intense suffering. It was 8 years of wrestling and questioning and begging God to change my circumstances or change my heart, to give me some answer and rescue me from my personal hell. And he was there, but he did not change my situation. And at the bottom of my pain, I told God I hated him. I said that he was either absent and unaware of my hurt and need, or worse, that he knew and did not care. I was so utterly alone. But as I sat with that accusation ringing in the air, God said to me, as a parent might to a teenager in a desperate state, "Oh, is it really so bad?" Not in a taunting way or a dismissive way, just a very present and back-rubbing way. It said, "Tell me more." In a little while, my feelings subsided enough for me to ask him in a sort of humiliated whisper, "Won't you ever be finished with me?" And he turned my words around and replied, "No, I will never be finished." I know that I'm incredibly lucky. I'm so blessed to have had that moment with my God, and that some people might not believe that story, but I am obligated by that sacred moment to tell you, all who are hurting, he will never be finished. His love bears all things regardless of what comes, believes all things, looking for the best in each one, hopes all things, remaining steadfast during difficult times, endures all things without weakening. Love never fails, it never fades nor ends. And this is his love for us. This is the kingdom of heaven, at hand, readily accessible when needed, and here in a moment. Can I be honest? It might be ugly. Can I ask for what I need? Is there enough? I'm coming to the gradual understanding that blessing in trade for suffering is not a transaction, but a process. A little truster, an image bearer, opens up the shell. And pain enters, but so does the kingdom. Both seep in, and God is closer to the center. One more layer looks like him, and he helps a little one to see a better story. A story of truth, belonging, connection, of not staying in the prison of that layer, the hard shell that keeps a soul closed in and alone. This has been an incredibly hard, difficult process for me. The writing of this, but also being up here, being seen, and I don't mean just being in front of a crowd, though that's hard enough, but being transparent and for you to have something on me, for you to know what softens my heart, what causes me joy and pain, even what opinions I hold. I've always been very private and closed about what deeply matters to me, because it could be used as a weapon. My soft underbelly is my weakness, and it feels like it could be my death. Is it safe? Do I belong? Is there enough? Can I risk being exposed? Can my nesting doll hold more than just me? It is so painful to change my closed heart. Secretly, my story reads more like Peter's in the book of Matthew. Time and again, I want to make my own way like he did, to boost myself up over other people, to get revenge, to hurry up God's work, to make it hurt less. I resist the patient and trusting work of the wilderness and charge ahead. My temptation questions burn so intensely at times, and now the penny drops for me. When Jesus was tempted in the wilderness with all those easy answers, he says, "Away from me, Satan." And when Peter demands that Jesus avoid the pain of the cross, Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan." So often it's in life it's tempting to duck the pain, but that is not the way of the kingdom of heaven. That is not an epic story. It has no heart in it, and it leaves us lonely and incomplete with no last chapter. When I called out to God in my deepest, darkest, most shattered place, I finally cried out with honesty. I told him I hated him. I said he sucked. This is not a nice girl. I told him he couldn't care. He couldn't see. He couldn't help me. In that moment, in that terrible story, the kingdom of heaven reached out to me. Not the outer shell waiting patiently and surrendering, calmly asking, but the rage-filled, entitled, broken, and for once, deeply honest, honest self, my core, the heart of my heart. And when I brought that ugly little thing, he brought me into his embrace, his daughter, loving me, proud of me, confident in me, the ugliest little version, but the most honest, in his image. If I could sing right now, I would. The gratitude that I feel of Jesus, what he has done for me. I hear the Hillsong United lyrics in my head. Grace, what have you done? Murdered for me on that cross. Accused in absence of wrong, my sin washed away in your blood. Too much to make sense of it all, I know that your love breaks my fall. The scandal of grace, you died in my place so my soul could live. Oh, to be like you, give all I have just to know you. Jesus, there's no one besides you, forever the hope in my heart. We are trying desperately to grasp the kingdom of heaven. It is at hand, within our reach, at a moment's notice. It is not sanitized, not cleaned up and edited, not doing it right. Like Peter stepping out of the boat and failing, but reaching out in the storm and gripping the hand of Jesus. In the deepest, truest center of our unworthy reaching, that is what gives us the strength to reach again. Because we are met with love. Our triune God has made us in the imago Dei, each and every person, without distinction of gender, nationality, anything. We are all included equally, and we are God's little children when we reach, when we watch the Father do it, and we do it too. Little trusters, co-creators of the kingdom of heaven, you who are hurting, messed up, lost, lonely, weary, and burdened, and even the self-assured, the clean-loving, and the Pharisee, today we are invited to shed a layer, to crack open our heart, and let the light shine in. Each of us is on the same journey, though the path may vary. Each of us writing an epic love story. What chapter will you write today? Will the kingdom of heaven come with some bumps and bruises and not getting it right? It is reaching out to you with an enduring, long-suffering, never giving up love. He will never be finished.